Okay. Okay. What about if I turn off the light? Good morning. Maybe? No. It's too much. Okay. Okay, so I think we can start. So how do you feel there? So okay, we talked this morning about the subnuclear organization, and then finally we will discuss briefly your research paper one. Okay. Okay, taking back the textbook that I gave to you for this first subject, okay, that is this review by Pamela Geyer, and just to make a resume of what we have seen during the last lesson, we have seen that chromosomes are confined to specific three-dimensional regions of the nucleus called chromosome territories. Then we have told a general principle that gene pool regions and silencing genes are frequently found in the nuclear periphery, and a similar location to that of heterochromatin, what you see heterochromatin in the electron microscope, of course. Then gene-rich regions and active genes usually map to the nuclear interior, what we can call nucleoplasm, if you like, okay, inside of the nucleus. And finally, that the genome is arranged as interdigitated chromosomal territories rather than randomly intertwined chromosomes. Okay, this principle that they touch but don't mix. Okay, this is the principle. So what we see here is we go through the review, okay, just to try to keep in parallel what you have for studying and what we say and we discuss here in the lesson. And in the second paragraph, actually, Pamela Geyer discussed the nuclear organization during differentiation. So the question is, does the nuclear organization change during differentiation of the cells? And the answer is yes, in the sense that many studies have shown that when you look at the undifferentiated cells, for example, the embryonal stem cells, okay, that are probably the most important example of undifferentiated cells, what you see is that the chromatin is not organized. Okay, it's diffused around, has not the typical distribution of heterochromatin at the periphery and blah blah. Okay, so it's kind of diffused. And I don't have a picture to show you, but also if you look at the specific proteins, like proteins of the nuclear lamina or the proteins, so they are not punctuate, they just diffuse. Okay, so the concept is that when a cell is not differentiated, you have a kind of not differentiated chromatin, in some sense, not organized chromatin. Okay, and as soon as you take the differentiation, so the first steps of differentiation, you see that the chromatin start organizing, so you can start to see the classical organization that you will see in fully differentiated cells. Okay? You see here. During embryonic development, proceeds from a single cell embryo processing a featureless nucleus. They say featureless, so undifferentiated. Okay? And then, interestingly, when you go in from here, this is the eighth cell epiblast, so the very, very early stage, okay? When you go to lineage-restricted nuclei, so when the cells start to differentiate, okay, at this point you see, again, the distinct closed chromatin structures. Hi. Have a seat. So, do you have any notion of the early embryonic development. Some of you has, some has not something. Can we go through just a little bit? You remember? This is in mammalian, of course. Okay, so you have fertilization. Just to remember the words, so don't be worried. These are pronuclei, okay? And then you have the first zygotic divisions, and you have an eight cell stage here. Then you start to make cell-to-cell connection. And then you start to have inner and outer cells. And at this point, at day five, this is the mouse. At day five, you have cavitation of this structure. And as you can see, the inner cell mass distinguishes because the other cells are monolayered, and the inner cell mass is there. So you call this inner cell mass, this you call blastocelic cavity, and this is trophoblast. This is important distinction because trophoblast will give rise to, say, you say, what the trophoblasts are precursor of? Extra-embryonic tissues. Okay, so my stop was just to bring your attention to the fact that here you have already differentiation. Okay? Here you have undifferentiated cells, and here you have already differentiated cells. And in fact, people that look at to the nuclei of this trophoblast started to see organization. So the trophoblast start to differentiate in this stage, and at this stage you see already heterochromatin and euchromatin organized. Okay? This reflects expression of the genes because, of course, trophoblasts do a different job from the other cells. And so they have specific profiles of expression. Okay, and this reflects the chromatin organization. That's it. Okay? So then going further, you see this is the implantation in which this early embryo goes through the uterine epithelium, and then you start to see the classical layers. This is trophoblast, this is what embryologists call hypoblast or hypoblast and epiblast here, and then finally you have a structure that is like this. In this is the epiblast and this is the hypoblast. And then, actually, the embryo, only these cells here will form the embryo. Only the two-layer bilaminar disc will form the embryo. Okay, so all the rest start to make extra-embryonic structure. And here you have migration. You remember gastrulation? You probably studied the gastrulation in amphibian oocyte, in which you have a ball like this, and then you start gastrulation. Here you have a small disc, few cells, and then the cells of the epiblast, they start to migrate inside and make the mesoderm. Okay, so here you have differentiation. And if you look at the nuclei here you start to have real differentiation of heterochromatin and euchromatin. Okay? All the other cells will give rise to different stories, like amniotic sac, the yolk sac, and so on. So they have extra embryonic structure. The embryo is here. Okay? Good. So just to remember. So this investigation indicated global changes in gene expression correlate with chromatin reorganization, which plays a role in lineage restriction. So when you start to see chromatin organization, the cells are really restricted as a differentiation potential in lineage. Okay, then there is another comment on your textbook that actually concerns genetic manipulation, because it's also interesting to see what happens when you bring a gene inside the cell. So you make a transfection or infection with a retroviral vector, lentiviral vector. So, and usually you know that when you let's consider the simplest story that you can do in the lab. You have a monolayer culture or whatever, okay, you prepare plasmids with whatsoever gene inside, and then you make very common old-style transfection, that means you make precipitation of DNA of the cells, and the cells pick up DNA, and some of the plasmids can go to the nuclei, okay, and can integrate. It's a rare event in mammalian cells, but it happens that they integrate in the chromosomes, and if you have in the plasmid a eukaryotic selector, that means resistance to neomycin, for example, that is the classical marker, you can select those cells which carries stably integrated transgene. Okay? It's clear to you? Okay. So, since it is completely random process, I mean, the plasmid goes wherever in the chromosomes, and also it will integrate in multiple copies. It's a typical situation. So if you make an analysis of DNA by Southern blot or whatsoever, sequencing, whatever, you see many tandem head-to-tail copies of the transgene. Okay? And the number of these copies is more or less random. Is a little bit dependent on the quantity of DNA that you transfect, but not that much. I mean, it's roughly dependent, not really linearly, okay? So you may have cells in which the array, they call the array, and that means this arrangement of several copies is few copies, or other situation in which the array is many, many copies. Okay, what happens to the two situations? It is clear. When you have integrated arrays of different size, you have a hierarchy of subnuclear localization. Large arrays will produce heterochromatin domain. This is typical. So whenever you have a high number of copies, okay, this will go to heterochromatin, and you find this chromatin domain to the nuclear periphery. Again, okay? If you have smaller array, they usually localize within the nuclear interior. Okay. This dynamic apparently depends upon the properties of a transgene promoter, because if you put a very strong promoter, usually you go inside, in the nuclear interior. If you have a weak promoter, usually it is repressed and goes to the heterochromatin. Okay? So, this is quite important, because there was an old story in the lab several years ago, and we didn't have yet the technologies to make, for example, homologous recombination or for integration of transgenes and so on. So we were using this kind of very old-style transfections, right? And typically, when you were trying to express a protein in a cell, okay, like you cloned a protein for example, biotechnological interest to express something, okay, in a cell. And you transfected one time, let's say, 1 microgram DNA, and then you look for the expression of the transgene, and there was very little expression of the transgene, and say, okay, I will transfect again, but 10 micrograms, so 10 times more, and typically no expression of the protein. And we could rationalize this kind of behavior. Transfecting much more DNA, usually no expression. Transfecting little DNA, expression. So this is the reason why, after several years, the people discovered this kind of logic. Okay, so the logic is that whenever you have high number of tandem repeats, you go to heterochromatize. What is the reason for this? Probably because this is a mechanism of defense of the genome against viruses or transposable elements that they replicate. They make a lot of arrays of repeats. So they should not be expressed. So probably there is a mechanism of repressing wherever you have this kind of repeated arrays. Okay? Good. So going further, the role, the following paragraph in the review was discussing the role discusses the role of nuclear lamina in gene regulation. And we will spend a little more time on this because it's quite important. So the peripheral localization of heterochromatin depends on the proteins in the nuclear lamina. That is a network of proteins that line the inner side of the nuclear envelope, okay? And there are some figures that you can see, but okay, we see the figures later. So genomic sites that contact the nuclear lamina have been mapped by DEM-ID and are called lamina-associated domains. So this is a acronym that we use sometimes, LADS, that means lamina-associated domains, right? The LADS range in size from tens to kilobases to several megabases, okay? So they are sometimes very large domains, are relatively gene poor, and this is expected, of course, have low transcriptional activity, and this is expected, and are enriched in repressive chromatin marks, and this is expected, okay? What is probably not expected is that LADS make up nearly 40% of human and mouse genomes. That's a lot, okay? So 40% of human mouse genomes actually are in some way attached to the periphery, okay? So this DEM-ID, I just put this red button here because it's something that probably we can discuss. Is probably better to discuss right now, but let me just explain how the protein network works, and then we go to the technology, okay? So this is just a resume of what I told you before. So how the chromosomes are attached to the nuclear lamina? Direct interaction or nucleosome-mediated interaction or mediated by lamina components. There are all the options, okay? So here there is a figure that I took from a review. If you are interested in these reviews, you find in bibliography in the Moodle site, okay? So they are there. Anyway, this is just a figure to show you that the this is the chromatin fiber in black here. Okay, and as you can see, there are many, many different situations. So these smaller lines here means the network of lemmings. This probably you studied in cytology. You remember lemmings A and lemmings B? They make a kind of network. It's kind of net that actually surrounds all the nuclei. Okay, below the membrane, of course. Okay, so this is composed by lemmings, and then you have associated proteins. So, lamin-associated proteins, or LAPs, also. Hi, can you find that still a seat somewhere? Oh, yeah, another one of you. Another one there. Another one. Yeah. Okay. So. You have, for example, proteins which are associated with the chromatin through bridges. This emerin you will find very, very often in the paper, research paper one. Everything is based on emerin, so you will see. Emerin is composed of a trans-lamin domain, so a domain which interacts with lamins. And then you have another domain which is capable of interacting with a different protein. It's called a BEF, and this protein is a chromo protein, so it's a protein associated with the chromatin, okay? So you can actually recruit the chromatin through this. Or you may have integral component of the chromatin. HP1 is the most diffused protein which is bound to chromatin. HP stands for heterochromatin protein 1. You will find it tomorrow. We will discuss on this protein, no worry. Okay, and this protein interacts with this other integral component of the nuclear periphery, that is LB1, which has, as you can see, has domain which interact both with the nuclear membrane and with the lamins. Okay. Or you can have interaction of BAF with other proteins, like LEP2B or MEN1 and blah, blah, blah. So there are many, 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 many proteins associated with the lamina. And actually, I open for you an activity. This is a different activity from those you made till now. This is a database. Okay? So you open the database, you will contribute something in the database. Okay? This is how many proteins. So you can fill the database of all the proteins associated to the lamina that you find in the, I don't know, on the web, in the books, whatever. Okay? Good, so you have, fundamentally, you have two kinds of interaction. One is, let's say, a protein to DNA interaction, okay? And the other one is a protein to histone interaction. There are two models, okay? So if I have an integral component of the lamina, which has a DNA binding domain, so it can recruit a specific sequence to the periphery, or you have, these are nucleosomes, as you probably recognize. These are histone modifications that we will study tomorrow, like acetylation or methylation or whatever. And you have specific proteins that binds to the histone modification and also binds to some of the protein integral to the lamina. So this is a protein-protein interaction, this is a protein-DNA interaction, to make the story short, okay? You have both the situation in the LEDs. Okay, so let me see. You have also, I told you already that heterochromatin is mostly in the nuclear periphery, but some heterochromatin is also associated to the nucleolus. Okay, it depends, the amount of heterochromatin associated to the nucleolus depends on the cell type. Some cell type has much, some cell type has very little, but anyway. So these domains of heterochromatin that are associated to nucleolus are called NEDs, of course. And also people have seen that you can exchange some domains from the lamina to the nucleolus and vice versa. Okay, so you have a kind of redistribution during this kind of phases. So if you have here in this figure, you see the nuclear lamina, then you see this is a nuclear pore, and this is the LEDs, heterochromatin associated to, okay? These are actually loops of the chromatin that are not associated to the periphery, so they can be transcribed, of course. Okay, and this is a nucleolus, which, as you can see, there is some heterochromatin associated to it. Okay, this is just to remember you that nucleolus is the site of RNA pol 1 activity. So you have transcription of what? Okay. Okay, and sometimes you have kind of dynamic exchange of domains, like for example a part of the domain here, as you can see, goes to the close to the nucleolus, okay, in this case, and so on. Good. So this is just the resume that you see in your review. And actually, in this figure of suggests you how the chromosome are compartmentalized in the nuclei. So you see the colors actually are individual chromosomes, like this one in blue, this in green. And so for every chromosome you have a part that stands to the periphery and another part that is inside the nucleus. So The other subject that we have to discuss is the what do the nuclear force do in terms of chromatin? And one important thing is that usually nuclear pore are excluded from heterochromatin, or if you want to say the other way around, heterochromatin is excluded from the nuclear pores. Okay, and this is a story that is, I just suggest, so if anybody of you is interested in this, there is a review also in the bibliography you can see. And here they discuss this kind of concept, and first of all they show you an electronic microscopy image in which you can see, if you are good enough, you can see that heterochromatin is interrupted sometimes, as you can see here and here in other places. And if you look at the enlargement, you see that these are nuclear pores. We cannot recognize them, but I mean, we have to be confident with the microscopist who made these kind of pictures. So they say these are nuclear pores, and as you can see, the heterochromatin is slightly interrupted in correspondence of that. Okay, actually, the most important studies. Okay, this is an organization of the in metazone. Okay, so you have. This is chromatin, heterochromatin. That is, these are the same proteins that you saw before, associated to lemmings. But if you go to the east, so lower eukaryotes, and with the organization of the lamina are really different. So if you go to the situation in Saccharomyces cerevisiae, you see that you have a different situation. First of all, you don't have lemmings. So you have directly proteins that are called the ESC, that are directly, they possess directly a transmembrane domain, okay? So they are anchored to the membrane directly. So you have to imagine the periphery of the nucleus in yeast like a continuous layer of this ESC protein, okay? No lemmings. And these ESC proteins are associated to heterochromatin through a protein that is called the SIR4. Okay? So the situation is much simpler than in mammalian, because in mammalians, as you have seen before, there are many, many kinds of interaction, many proteins, different proteins, lemmings associated, and so on. So here you have a very simple situation. You have ESC1 and one bridging protein, that's it. Okay? So you can study better, it's easier to study this model. Okay, so people made a fluorescent approach, and they stained either nuclear pore components, so using antibodies again, some of the components of the nuclear pore, and antibodies again ESC, and try to make the localization of it. So you can see this kind of image. Sorry, just turn off the light for a moment. Okay, so you can see this NUP49 is a component of the nuclear pore, and this ESC is there. And as you can, you can clearly see that either you have green dots or red dots. There is no overlap of the two colors. So otherwise, you will see yellow color. There is no yellow color there. So it means that where you have nuclear pores, you don't have heterochromatin. That's it. Okay. So the same kind of story was repeated, of course, using mammalian cells, and the story is almost the same. Okay. So conclude that there is a kind of exclusion of heterochromatin on the nuclear pore, and this aspect is logic, because nuclear pore is a passage from cytoplasm to nucleus and vice versa, so should probably be free. But also the other interesting thing is that you very often when you use highly transcribed genes, you find them in proximity of the nuclear pores. Okay, so this kind of rule general. This morning one of you was asking me, sometimes there is a contradiction because some of the genes associated to the periphery can be transcribed. And of course, probably are genes that are very close to the nuclear pores, and so they can be transcribed. This image that you saw before actually explains what you were the last phrase. So if you, this is heterochromatic, but probably these genes that are here in the loop. If you make any kind of analysis, molecular or morphological analysis, you will see very close to the nuclear lamina, but yet they are transcribed. Okay, so this is the reason why. Okay. Let's go to the other paragraph, then we stop a moment for some questions, if you have. Okay, so finally, of course, we have discussed it until now. We have discussed it heterochromatin, so replacement chromatin. Try to change point of view. Of course, the nucleus is the site of transcription. So the other question is, can we ask if the machinery of transcription, like polymerases, but not only, because you know that eukaryotes for making RNA messenger RNA need much more than the RNA polymerase. You need all the splicing apparatus, okay? You need capping enzyme, you need poly A tail synthesizing apparatus, and blah, blah. So you have a lot of problems, a lot of stories, okay? So what we call usually the complex of all these proteins is called the transcriptional apparatus. And it includes something like somebody has made games trying to evaluate how many proteins you need to make a messenger RNA, and they summed up to something like 500 different proteins. So it's a kind of very big story for that. And so you can study where these proteins are, okay? And of course you can use that story using antibodies, essentially, so immunolocalization. And if you want to see the transcription going on, you can use RNA fish. You remember last time we discussed the RNA fish or DNA fish to see the DNA, okay? So you can mix these three technologies together to see what happens, okay? If you use antibodies, you see a story that is illustrated always in this figure. That is, as you can see, that in regions that are not occupied by chromosome, that are these white regions here, that we call interchromosomal regions, you very often you have bodies that you can detect by either by electron microscopy if you are careful enough, or by immunolocalization using some of the specific proteins, and they are really complexes, okay, big complexes, okay. One of the stories that I show you is RNA polymerase too. We have a plethora of antibodies that are specific for RNA polymerase 2. And so, may I try just for a moment? Then I put the light on again. You see here. So this is a single nucleus from a cell that has been stained using a RNA polymerase 2 antibody. Okay, so the reasoning is, if you have 20,000 genes in a cell, okay, if you sum up also the non-coding genes, you arrive probably to 50,000. Of those, half of them is transcribed. So reasoning of those, you expect to have 25,000 locations with the polymerases, okay? So you will, if you take a nucleus in which the polymerase is in 25,000 different locations, you see a diffuse coloration. There is a diffuse staining. There is no other way to see it. Right? Can you follow my reasoning? This is not true. So when you make a staining of a nucleus, you see spots. So this means that the polymerases are not diffused all through the nucleus, but they are clustered in small or even big spots like this one, okay, and these are called actually transcriptional factories, like having 100 molecules of RNA polymerase all together, okay, and they make a factory. Okay. So the other question is, can I co-localize? Can I see if this polymerase is active or not? So people use a coupled immunostaining with an RNA immunofish. I hope that some of you have chosen this fish as a methodological wiki, so you can explain us how to differentiate RNA from DNA using a probe. Okay. So you make a fluorescent probe with an expressed gene, okay, and the fluorescence is red. And as you can see, there is a perfect colocalization here. So you have a factory in green. You have RNA that is being transcribed. This is during transcription, okay? And you see this red spot, and you have a yellow something in between. That means that the two things are one overlap to the other one, okay? So this is a region in which transcription occurs, okay? Of course, people repeated several times the story, and they concluded that usually you have these kind of active genes that are usually co-localized with RNA pole. Okay. So this kind of small bodies that you have all around in the nucleus that are in the interchromosomal space are called with different names. You can find as foci, spicules, bodies, spots, whatever, but they actually have the same story. They are small bodies in the nucleus. And this supramolecular organization contain a number of proteins. So people did, you know, co-localization using two antibodies, a couple of antibodies to see what they were. And this contains RNA polymerase, of course, and associated factors, including proteins involved in RNA processing, like splicing factors, polyadenylation enzymes, captain enzymes, and whatever. Okay, so they are really transcriptional factors. Okay, good. This concept was somehow surprising when the people proposed it. But actually we knew already a transcriptional factory before, that is the nucleolus, of course. The nucleolus is the transcriptional factory for pole 1. It's a big one because, as you know, the cells need a lot of ribosomes. So this is a big, is nothing else than the big factory in which you have many molecules of RNA pole 1. And where the genes encoding, you remember that the RNA, ribosomal RNA, are many copies in the genome. Okay. They converge. So these are all the genes in different chromosomes that converge to the nucleolus. And here you have the factors. So these genes are transcribed a lot. Okay. So actually, we can consider, in the light of this discussion, you can consider the nucleolus as the big factory for the virus, ribosomal RNA. Okay, so that's the story. And in this image, you see there was a transcription factor, transcriptional factory, but there is also different bodies that are called also in different ways, that are the repressive bodies. So some of these speckles or whatever that you see in the nucleus are not active. And if you look inside, you find these kind of proteins that are called polycomb group proteins. These are repressors, okay? And they form a spot also in the nuclei, and this is quite amazing because they are not in the periphery. So they probably represent genes that are being repressed, but they were active before. So they are in the middle of the nucleus, they were active, then they are repressed. And these proteins are the proteins that repress. Probably this repression is dynamic, is different from the repression of heterochromatic that you see in the periphery, okay? In Drosophila, there is a specific sequence of the DNA which associates with these polycomb proteins, and it's called polycomb response elements. But in mammals, no PREs have been identified so far, so we don't know exactly where they actually bind. Okay, just to show you, this is polycomb bodies, okay, and this is full of transcriptional repressors. So in this region, no transcription. Okay. Finally, the last thing that is discussed in this part of the review are CTCF. CTCF actually is a kind of transcription factor. It's a DNA binding protein that is. Present in the nucleus in many copies, and is a zinc finger protein with a highly conserved DNA binding domain, and it binds to this sequence here, CCCTC, and this protein actually has the role of making loops of chromatin, as you can see, okay. You have, for example, in this image, you see that these green spots are active genes, and these red spots are inactive genes. And very often, CTCF insulates active from inactive chromatin. So it probably makes loops in which you have confined active genes or inactive gene like this one. Okay, so it's a kind of looping making protein. Okay, we will encounter the CTCF protein in when we discuss the transcriptional regulation. So just take it as a, let's say, architectural component of the nucleus, and that's it. So finally, the model that emerges from all these studies is that you have a very highly organized nucleus in which chromosomal territories are separated from each other, and in which active genes actually loops out of the chromosomal territories to reach transcriptional factories. Okay, and when the active genes have to be repressed, should be repressed for any kind of stimulus of the cell, they can be reached by these polycomb proteins. In any case, in interchromosomal space, you find all the situation or the factories that are devoted to either transcription or repression of the genes. Okay? Okay, so at this point we can stop for 1 minute. First of all, if you have any question on this part, have you read the textbook already? Yeah, most of you? Okay. So it's quite clear, I think. No? What do you think about that review? Is that easy to read for you? To read for you? Not really. It's too difficult. There are many concepts that you didn't know before.
Or just too many.
Too many. Concentrated. Yeah. Concentrated. Yeah, but the work that you have to make, just to comment on this, because I told you in the first lesson that you have not to study on the slides. Okay, you have to study on the reviews. So whenever your work is really to go through the review, anything that you don't know, I'm not joking, go to Wikipedia and try to understand, because of course there is a background that is not easy to see. I usually try to select reviews in which the comprehension seems to be easier, but it's not very common, of course. I mean, they are scientists that probably spend most part of their life on this subject. Of course, it is, I mean, basic things for them is not basic thing for us. So you can understand. Anyway, and that's it. So. So I will spend now the remaining time of the lesson, but we stop just to see that this question was one of the main questions for people studying this story. Okay, so is differential localization of chromosomes, that means periphery nucleoplasm, is a cause or a consequence of gene activity or gene repression, whatever, okay? Something like the egg and the chicken. I mean, it's difficult to say because we don't know. The only thing that we know today is that in the undifferentiated cells, when potentially all the genes are potentially expressed because they are undifferentiated, okay, you see that there is no chromatin organization. And then you go to differentiated cells in which you know which gene has to be expressed and which is not, you have organization. But this is a cause or consequence. So the paper that I gave to you as a research paper one was one of the first papers, one of the first studies addressing this kind of problem. Okay, and what they did was to see whether trying to making some kind of anchor, artificial anchoring of a region of the chromosome, okay, to the nuclear lamina will cause repression of the genes. Okay. The other way to study was, of course, what you saw in the first lesson, to study an active gene versus an inactive gene, but this is not a dynamic situation, so this is the experiment. So we can stop now for 5 minutes, and then we try to go through this paper, and note, please, that the other papers that you will have in the future, I won't discuss with you. Okay, only on request, so if you have any kind of incomprehension, you can ask me. But for this one, I want to show you what you have to do with the research paper. Okay, so we go through carefully and see the story. Okay? Stop until 10 o'clock. Then. While we are here, I can just show you the story of the activity. So, just not to lose too much time. Okay, this is the activity I told you. Okay, can you see? Activity 3, a database of protein associated to the nuclear lamina. This is a database. So when you enter there, okay, you just click add entry, okay? And then you have the usual HTML box in which you can write or paste or whatever. Okay. So the only thing is that you have to please check the list of the other people, not to repeat the same entry. Okay. So for example, lemon A. Yeah, I'm sure that the first one of you accessing to the database will put lemon A. This is the easiest way. So take a look of what the other students did, and then do not repeat the same entry, please. Okay. Good. So you make a database of proteins interacting with the lamina, and you will see how to do it. Good. So let me just download research paper 1. That is this guy here. Okay. Okay, download. Press download. Okay. Nothing happens. Oh yeah, okay. So this is the paper. And as I told you, how can I image this way? Okay. As I told you, the The main question moving those authors to make this study was the question that we saw before. So is cause or consequence? So in the first part of the the nature has not the classical introduction, material and methods, as the other papers have. But you can recognize the abstract because it's in bold. So this is the abstract. It's the same text that you find in PubMed, for instance. Okay. So when you look for a paper in PubMed, you have this part here that is okay, public, say. Okay. So this is a kind of resume, or this is the content of this paper. And please, when you report, this is not to be reported, but just to tell you, when you have to report, don't make the resume at the beginning. Okay, so this is the common error that make the students. They lose time to make a resume to tell the abstract. This is not real useful. So you start with a introduction that actually starts here. Okay, so you have to distinguish. In Nature papers, you have to distinguish what is introduction, what is the results, and whatever. And really, you have to do this exercise. So when you go there, this part here is introduction, okay? From here to here, because if you read it, they say the mammalian nuclei chromatin is organized by blah, blah, blah. Of course, this is not result, it's introduction, okay? And say other studies have shown that nuclear periphery is comprised of at least two subcompartments, blah, 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 blah. And this is references, okay? And this is, everything is known. So this introduction. And then we designed a two-component inducible system. This is the result, because they started with the study, okay? So you have to identify the parts, okay? So, results. We designed a two-component system. So what is the strategy they used to address this question? They devised this kind of story that you see in this figure. Can you see the figure in the back? Can you see? I can try to enlarge a little bit, but not much, because otherwise we don't see. I have probably to turn the light off, because otherwise we don't see the images. Okay, so what they thought was to devise something that was transposable to the nuclear periphery or to the nucleoplasm at will. Okay, so a system in which you can do some trick to the cell and then make the chromosome to go there, or vice versa. So what they used was a reversible system, okay, a reversible protein-protein interaction system, protein, actually DNA interaction system. And they used the paradigmatic first example of molecular biology, which is the most known DNA protein interaction in all the older books of molecular biology, was the operon in Escherichia coli. Okay, you probably remember a little bit about it. Operon in bacteria is a linear arrangement. There is a promoter, and the promoter is divided in promoter and operator. Operator is a small sequence which binds specifically a repressor. Okay, so when you do not have lactose in the media, okay, this repressor will bind to the operator and block the access of polymerase to the promoter. So no polymerase, no transcription, the gene is silent, okay? This repressor is called LEC-I, okay? That is constitutively expressed by another gene, okay? That it actually is a little bit farther upstream of this operon, okay? So this is continuous, this is synthesized, there is a homeostatic level of the repressor. And what is regulating on and off is lactose. So this is allosteric protein, that's a DNA binding domain, and an allosteric domain which binds lactose. When lactose is inside, actually it's not lactose, it's beta-galactoside. Okay, but anyway, when the lactose is inside the site, the protein is not able anymore to recognize the DNA because it's a change of conformation. No more possibility of interacting with the DNA. Okay? So, usually in the lab, we use this kind of system 100 times per year because it's a very easy on-off system. Okay? And especially because you can use a non-hydrolyzable molecule. If you use lactose, after a while, the cell will have consumed your lactose because it splits in two. Okay, beta-galactosidase is one of the enzymes. Okay, it splits in two. If you use this guy here, that is called IPTG, that stands for indolyl propyl thio beta-galactoside. I know the name. Okay. Just to remember the acronym that is IPTG. Okay, this is not hydrolyzable, but it will bind to the site of the lecai, exactly as the lactose does. So you can treat the cells with a low amount of IPTG and getting this system working. Okay. So this is the system, lecai, lecoperon, and to make the system very efficient, they put several repeats of lecoi. Okay, this is not only one single sequence, it's several sequences, the same in array. And this makes the story much more efficient. Okay. So second, they say, okay, we have to now to have a system that I can bring to the lamin. Okay, a protein which binds to the lamin. So they made a fusion protein, they made a vector, plasmid vector, joining sequences, encoding for GFP to see it. This is glycosylated protein, to see it. Then after a spacer, there is the gene encoding LAC-I, so the repressor. Okay. Then after a spacer, they put this MD, that is the emerine. You remember one of the proteins that you saw before? So a protein which has a domain which interacts directly with the lamins. Okay. Now you probably remember that in the first slides that we showed before, there was lamin, then there was this emerine, and then there was interaction with the chromatin. You remember that? It was another protein in between, but anyway, there was interaction with the chromatin. So if I use the complete EMD, this will be a repressing protein itself. So what they did to avoid to be a repressive protein, they made delta. So they deleted the terminal domain of the emerine. Okay? So in this case, they kept the lamin interacting domain, but there is no repressing domain together. Okay, so this protein, this delta emerine that you see here, is just the anchor to the lamin. So you have a protein which is a fusion protein that you see here. That is the small green line is the emerine domain. This green protein is the GFP, and this red protein here is the LAC-I repressor. Okay. So this is a fusion protein. Again, they made two versions of this fusion protein, one with the delta emerine domain and the other one without. So the without will not be recruited to the nuclear periphery. Okay. This one with the three domains will be recruited to the... So they could check the two situations. Recruited, not recruited. Okay? So at this point, of course, this is the recruiting protein. This domain here, the red one, will interact with LAC-O. if you have no beta galactosidase in the medium, okay, this will bind to it, okay. Good. And to see this reporting gene here, they fuse the LACO sequences to a reporter. This reporter is the hygromycin gene. Hygromycin is an antibiotic, is one of the markers that you can choose in eukaryotic cells to select them. Okay? You can transfect a plasmid with hygromycin, will give resistance to hygromycin to the cells. And vice versa. And this TK is just a common promoter, the thymidine kinase promoter. But this ubiquitary, so the gene will be expressed everywhere. Okay? Good. So at this point, the system, as you can see, functions in a very good way. So you have this reporter that is either in the nucleoplasm. When you have IPTG, okay, or when you remove IPTG, the repressor will bind to LACO, and so it will be recruited to the lamin, and vice versa. The system on off, quite easy. Okay, good. Final, this, if this vector, TKIG and LACO, is integrated in the chromosome, pay attention to this fact because this is really important in the paper. If this vector, this is a vector, it's a plasmid, right? But if you integrate in the chromosome, at this point when you make on-off situation, it will bring all the part of the chromosome together with him himself. So it will bring a part of the chromosome close to the heterochromatin. Okay, good. So this is the system and how they realized it. They took, first of all, they took this vector, so the TKIG LACO vector, and they stably integrated in cells. I don't remember the cell. Is that written somewhere? Do you remember that? NIH-33 or something. Anyway, it's fibroblast. This is an extremely transfectable cell. You just show to the cell the tube with the DNA and they get transfected. Sorry for the joke. Anyway, they are very, very common for this kind of experiments. Okay, so they first transfected this plasmid and they selected with hygromycin. Okay? So after a while, clones appear that have a continuous resistance to hygromycin, so that means that they have integrated the vector inside. And they took these clones, expanded them to work with, and then they transfected again another vector that is the vector containing the reporter fusion protein. The fusion protein. Okay? And this can be transfected in transient. There is no need to integrate them again. You have just to transfect in transient transfection. You know what is transient transfection, okay? When you put a plasmid on the cells, they pick up the gene and they start to express it in, let's say, 12, 24 hours after the transfection. And the expression keeps quite high until 72 to 96 hours. Okay, so if you study the cells in that window, you have high expression of your protein and you can study what happens in the cells. Okay, no need to select. Okay, now they wanted to check if the system worked correctly. So in the figure 1b, this 1a is just the scheme of the work, and then in b, I have to turn off the light probably. Okay, you can see better what is shown there. I have to run a little bit more, otherwise we never reach the end of the story, okay. Sorry, okay. So what they did was to try to see whether the system was working correctly. So this is just a very validation of the system. So they took the GFP LAC without the MD anchor, say. So this is the first version there of the story. Okay. and they looked for the localization of the trans gene, this guy here, okay? So they made fish of this sequence here, okay? This is not great, it's not GFP, okay? It doesn't anything to do with the GFP. They just made fish with this guy, okay? And as you can see, this is nucleoplasmatic, okay? Then you make the other construct, that is GFP-like, with the anchoring proteins, and you see that they is in the nuclear periphery. What is the red that you see? This is just immunostaining against lamins. Okay? So this is just validation. What is clone M? What is clone S? This is what I told you before, talking about arrays. When you transfect, you may have very high number of repeats or low number. So they just choose two clones, clone M, that means multiple. So there are many copies of the transgene, and S, that it means single copy of the transgene. Of course, this is visible much more than the other one because it's smaller. Right? Anyway, you can see also in single integration. Okay. Then you make other. They made other validation. Okay. That, of course, as I told you, last lesson for the localization of chromosome, you cannot just take one picture and say, okay, this works. You have to make statistics. So they counted a number of cells. Okay, and this is exactly the quantitative analysis of this, okay? So you have, when you have GFP lack without anchoring, this is the number of events that are close to the periphery. When you have the anchoring, of course, the percentage increases a lot. Same story in the other clone, okay? So it's just to show you that it's a common story. Okay, good. Then they made other verification that I will not tell you, because it's very simple. This is just co-localization of other proteins like nuclear pore or another nuclear pore protein or LEPS, that is one of the proteins, the lamin B1, just to show the co-localization of this protein with the heterochromatic domains. It's just a control, say, okay? So, after this figure, they say good, it works, but there is still something to be checked carefully, because when you see a localization like the one that you saw before with immunostaining and then fish analysis, does it demonstrate direct molecular interaction? I mean, when you don't make me again to show the figure. The figure in which you see the nuclear periphery in red, and then you see the small spots in green. And my question is: do these kind of experiments demonstrate a direct molecular interaction? No, of course they demonstrate colocalization, but we are in an enormous scale as compared to the molecular interaction, okay? So is there any other kind of system that can show direct molecular interaction? Of course, it's a rhetoric question. Yes, we have this DEM technology that I told you before, okay? The DEM technology, let me see if I can show you how it works. DEM technology, wait. Not one, this one, is that one? Yeah. Okay. Yeah, okay. Here we are. Well, DEM technology is to make a fusion in between two proteins. One that is the protein that you study, for example, this lamin A. And with the DEM, what is DEM? Is DNA adenine methyltransferase. That is an enzyme from Escherichia coli, which methylates adenines. And as you know, in the mammalian genomes, you have methylation to cytosine, not to adenine. So if you make a fusion protein like this one, okay, And if the DNA is recruited close to the lamin, the DEM enzyme will methylate adenines in the DNA. Okay? If this section is not recruited, of course, it cannot methylate anything. Okay? So the DEM technology is exactly what you see in this figure. So you make a fusion. I am fused. where is ready? This is ready. Okay. So you make fusions, and then you interrogate your reporter gene. Okay. So the technology is to make methylation. Then when you methylate this adenine in the context of ATCG sequence, because it's a sequence-specific methylation, this sequence is not attacked anymore by a restriction enzyme. So you can detect methylation just by cutting with a restriction enzyme. Okay, it's quite easy to do. Then you make a PCR of your segment. If you have a signal, means no methylation. If you have a signal, means methylation. If you don't have a signal, means no methylation, because the enzyme has cut between. Do I have to explain it back? Because is that okay?
Yes.
So they make a fusion like them with lamin B1. Okay, lamin B1, of course, it's recruited to the membrane, to the lamins. Okay, and then they analyze it with PCR, the LECO 5 prime. So the part of LECO repeats that is in the vector. You remember? That is connected with the TCAP hygromycin. So if you have a signal, means that the DNA containing LECO is close to the lamin. Okay, so they use a plus IPTG, minus IPTG, that is the switch on off of the system. As you can see, the DAM activity is one with the IPTG. When you remove IPTG, this is recruited and you have a higher signal. Then they made again with another couple of primers, that is LACO proximal, so they closest to the hygromycin gene. Then again the signal is up. Okay, another fusion. DAM is fused with emerine this time. Against same story. You see, up, the signal goes up, and then a negative control. They took octa-1. Do you know what is octa-1? Octa-1 is a transcription factor that is important in the development of lymphocytes. It drives the expression of immunoglobulins, by the way. Okay. It has nothing to do with the system, of course. So it's a negative control. And as you can see, this fusion doesn't increase any of the methylation. Okay. So this is a direct molecular interaction. So the system works, okay? Not only by looking at it, but also by demonstrating molecular interaction itself. Good. So this is the demonstration, the final demonstration. Then asking the question, because until now we just checked the system. No answer to our original question. Does a gene, when it's recruited to the lamina, get repressed? This is the question. So how can we explore this kind of question? We go to figure two, three. Okay, figure three contains the results, true results. So if it gets repressed, how can I know if it gets repressed? Of course, you remember that in the LACO there is hygromycin. So I can measure the expression of hygromycin. Okay, so I make a quantitative PCR, a real-time PCR. I reverse transcribe the RNA, and then I measure, okay, this hygromycin messenger RNA with a couple of primers. Okay, good. And so let's see. This is clone M. This is clone S. This is IPTG. So I have IPTG in the medium. Where is the gene with IPTG? I ask you. When I have IPTG in the medium, where is the gene, the reported gene?
Nucleoplasm.
Will it get be expressed in the nucleoplasm? Will it be expressed? Yes. Yes, it is expressed. Look at this. Then I remove IPTG. The gene is recruited to the nuclear periphery, and this expression falls down. Not really zero. Not really zero. Okay, but a little bit. Okay. This is clone S, same. Okay. Good. So why is not complete? I mean, you expect that if the gene is completely recruited to the periphery, you will get complete repression. So the problem is that the dynamic of bringing a piece of chromosome to get to the periphery requires, it's not possible in a stationary quiescent cell. They showed, if you read the text, that this relocalization needed proliferation. So a cell has to enter mitosis to be able to change position of the chromosomes. So the this partly efficient system just reflects the number of cells that went through mitosis in your model system. Okay? This is something that has been proved by many scientists. I mean, dynamic of the chromosome are difficult, okay? Because you can imagine the space in the nucleus is not a drop of liquid. It's full of proteins, full of stories, and the change of position requires mitosis. During mitosis, you have complete condensation of the chromosomes, okay? Disruption of the nuclear envelope, mitosis, and then back reorganization of the stories. And so at that, in that case, if you have the correct proteins, they can relocalize. Okay? Good? Very good. So this is the effect of messenger RNA. We can also look at a different story. If a gene is expressed, will the histones be acetylated or not?
If it is expressed.
If it is expressed.
It's acetylated.
Yeah, if a gene is expressed, you will have high level of acetylation to histones, right? So you use a measure of this acetylation. They measured acetylation to H4, to histone 4. And as you can see, you have this level when you have IPTG in the nucleoplasm, so expressed, high level of acetylation. When you bring to the periphery, it's lowest, low level of acetylation. Fits with the model, okay? Now, what you see in the B part is a morphological demonstration of what you told. So they use the technology that still you have to illustrate to me. That is, they use the RNA fish, okay, to see whether the localization of the gene corresponds to the transcription. Okay, so they use this RNA fish, and as you can see, when the gene is nucleoplasmatic, there is transcription. Okay, and when you go to the periphery, no transcription. Okay, and sometimes you have the two alleles. This is two alleles. One allele is recruited, no transcription. The other one is nucleoplasmatic, transcription. Okay, so they demonstrate that it works in other terms. Okay. Now the most difficult question is this one in figure D. It's very important, really very important, probably more important than the other things. I mean, the other things are in some way expected, because of course the others built the system exactly to show that. So if it doesn't work, they were very, very sad about it. So it works, but this is a very relevant question, because our gene is integrated in the chromosome, is right? So the question is, okay, I am looking at my transgene, but my transgene is an artificial story, has many, many operators and blah, 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 so this can get repressed by other mechanisms just because it contains repeats or whatever, okay? So the question is, do the other genes that are in the integration site also get repressed? This is an important question. Okay, so you have integrated reporter, and in both sides you will have other genes. Okay, so they made a little walking around the chromosome. They choose one clone, of course, because you have to choose one clone of the cells. Okay, because the integration is a random process. They choose one clone. I think that is clone S. Don't remember, but you have to read through. I think that is clone S. And they made by Southern blotting and PCR and sequencing, they made a little walk around the integration site, okay, to look for genes that are close to it. And they found that there are two genes that are one in the left side and the other in the right side of the integration point. One is this CXCL5 and XCL1, okay. Doesn't matter what they encode, okay? And they asked, they asked exactly the same story as before. So in the presence of GFP lock without anchor, you remember this constant that is without anchor? So it cannot be relocalized, okay? And in the presence of anchor, that is delta emery. So look at this is the hygromis in the vector, so of course it is repressed, of course. Okay. When you look at the CXL5, same story, repressed, and you look at CXL1, same story, repressed. So this is a very important experiment. It means that also when you have a construct that is completely artificial, but yet the genes that are on both sides of the chromosome, they also get repressed. Okay? So that's a very important result of this. Then, the question is that, of course, you still have to see whether this can happen in a normal context that is not engineered, as you saw before. And so for doing this, they use the fish for. Actually, you have seen it already because when we're discussing fibroblast and pro-B cells. Actually, I showed already that to you. You remember? Was the IgH locus we discussed about last time? I took it from there, of course. So they use the same technology to see whether endogenous expressed and non-expressed genes are also located close to the periphery or vice versa. Okay, and they used this was a common story. So when you look for IgH, so the heavy chains of immunoglobulin, you look in fibroblast, this is not never expressed because fibroblasts do not make immunoglobulins, and as you can see, the spots are peripheric, clearly peripheric. Okay, and when you look the same situation in pro-B cells, on the contrary, they are clearly nucleoplasmatic here and here. Okay, so this is the reason why. What is the something that they added to this notion is that they made this dumb fusion analysis also in this case, okay, just to see whether there was a molecular interaction. So I told you before that octa-1 is a factor, transcription factor, that is really very important for immunoglobulin production. In other terms, octa-1 will bind to the promoter of immunoglobulin. So octa-1 interacts with IGH locus. Okay? While, of course, DAM Emerin fusion and DAM Lemin B1 fusion will not. Do you agree? Okay. So at this point, they analyzed the VHJ, that is the locus for the heavy chain. You can see here. Okay. So when you use a DAM OCT, is there. Okay. This is fibroblast. I remember to you that in fibroblast, you have location to the periphery. So you have signal when you look for DAM OCTA. Okay. But you have also, of course, you have also signal when you look for DAM EMD. Okay? Good. Okay. Then you go to, you don't have signal with DAM OCTA because in this case the JIT is repressed. So of course the transcription factor won't bind to the promoter. Okay? So you have a signal with the lamin and with the emerin because it's close to the periphery. Okay? These are controls, negative controls. When you go to the other situation, so to the other cells, so the Probe cells, in Probe cells the gene is active, nucleoplasmatic, and hence the octa one will bind to the promoter to drive expression of the immunoglobulin locus. Okay, and if you look, the situation is exactly the other way around. So you do not have signal with lamin fusion or emerin fusion. You have a high signal with octa one. Some perplexity? You can read the paper. Sorry. But anyway, I think that it's quite clear. Okay? It's quite clear. Just to probably to check a little bit on the stories there. And then you will find the solution. Okay? So, that's all. I mean, if you look in the supplementary material, you see a big picture how the reporter vector is constructed, so you can try to learn how it is. Okay. So, and the other story is that I have still to show you two things. When you look at this relative H4 acetylation, and if you look at the legend, this is C. You look at the legend, okay, and this is a cross-linked chromatin from the indicated cells who was immunoprecipitated using an antibody to acetylation H4. Do you know how is the short name of this technology? Nobody of you?
Maybe.
Yeah, exactly. This is it. CHIP analysis with this acronym, we mean chromatin immunoprecipitation. Do you know how it works?
You recognize protein bound to chromatin, uh-huh. So you precipitate.
Yeah.
And eventually also the chromatin bound.
Yeah. Okay, so just to show you to all, okay. Okay, see, this is the DAM technology. And this is chromatin immunoprecipitation. This is a very common technology today, so we have to learn it very carefully. Also because in the next lesson you will see that we apply several times, so please understand it well. Okay. So the chromatin immunoprecipitation actually is a technology that allows you to study in vivo what a protein binds in the chromosome. Okay, which sequence, which part of the chromosome the protein will bind. Good. So what you do usually is to take cells, or also tissue, but it's much more difficult with tissues. But anyway, it can be done. Usually you apply in cells in culture, and you cross-link proteins and protein-DNA interaction using a very common reagent that everybody of you knows, the formaldehyde. It's a common fixative for histology, nothing really special. It will make cross links in between protein-protein and protein-DNA, okay? Also protein-RNA, actually, as a matter of fact, with cross-link. So what we do usually is to put a concentration of formalin, like 4% formalin, to the media of the cells and leave for 1 to 3 minutes, a very short burst. Okay, this will cross-link. Then we add a mine, like the common Tris buffer or glycine, which is an amino group, and will quench all the remaining formaldehyde. Okay, they will stop the reaction. In other words, okay. So we wash the cells at this point, and we fragment the chromatin. Okay, so no instructional DNA. This figure is very, very imprecise, because actually you have chromatin here, so you have nucleosomes. Okay, it's not DNA, it's chromatin. And you fragment, and usually you can do different kind of fragmentation. You can, for example, use DNAs, or you can use restriction enzymes, but actually the most commonly used method is to sonicate. Just put a probe in the... never seen a sonicator?
Yes.
It's a small metal probe inside, and then... makes an ultrasound, and it will fragment everything. Okay? And the reason why is the most common way to go is that when you use enzyme, actually the enzyme have more accessibility to euchromatin than heterochromatin, so it will introduce a bias. Can you follow me? If you have heterochromatin tightly packed, the enzyme will not cut. And if you have large chromatin, will cut. So you introduce a bias in your analysis. So we prefer to make a sonicated, that is just different. Everything is sonicated, it's fragmented. And you usually regulate just a little bit your sonicator in order to make short fragments, like 500. Of course, you cannot measure exactly, but you have a Gaussian distribution around something like 500. Some others use less, but anyway, let's say 500. And so these fragments now, they will have all the proteins bound to it. Okay, then you select. Okay, so you put an antibody in the solution. And this antibody is against one specific protein you want to know. And this will bind to the fragments of chromatin which possess the protein boundary. At this point you add a protein acephalase or something like this one, a reagent that will bind to the immunoglobulins, and so you will select only the fragments that you selected, and then then precipitate with centrifugation. Okay? So you have from one side all the fragments of chromatin containing your protein of interest, and you discard everything else. Okay? At this point, you just make a purification of DNA, so you revert the cross-linking. It's not that difficult, just eat a little bit of the solution, and then use a proteinase, and usually the common separation of DNA from proteins, which is the common way to separate proteins from DNA. You don't know. Phenyl chloroform instruction? Never heard about it? Phenyl chloroform. It's an organic solvent, and the protein will go to the organic solvent, the DNA will stay in the aqueous phase. Okay? It's very common technology. So you go there and you purify DNA. Now, of course, you have two kind of interesting solutions. Either you want to study a specific gene, one specific gene, like in the paper. Because in the paper, if you remember, they were asking for the hygromycin gene, so the reporter. So very commonly, one of these probably millions of fragments, or at least thousands of fragments, is the one that you're looking for. And so you use the primordial technology for molecular biology, that is a PCR. Okay? Primers recognizing your hygromycin gene, and then you make a PCR. If you have a signal, it means that you have the hygromycin in between the immunoprecipitated DNA should not have signal the fragment. Okay? Understood? Or you, if you are interested in genome-wide biology, like we are, and you can make sequencing of those, okay? You study NGS, so you can just take all the fragments. Now you know probably how to do. Yeah, you have to adapt, to add an adapter in the left, in the right. You make a library, and you sequence. So you can have the idea of all the places in the genome that are bound to your favorite protein here. Okay, so this is called, I mean, if you make a PCR, it's called a chip. If you make sequencing, it's called a chip-seq. Okay? You will discuss chip-seq so many times in the future, so don't worry. Now, this is very final, and we'll take again. There is a very interesting modification of the this chip technology that I told you. That is to study, you remember, not in the paper, not in the research paper, but before we were looking for example, for CTCF. You remember CTCF was the one making looping of DNA, okay? So it means that one molecule of CTCF will bind to another molecule of CTCF farther away and bring together. So how can we measure this story? There is any biochemical methodology that can ask for that. And this is exactly derived from more or less the chip technology. So the story is, if you have a fragment of DNA that interacts through protein-protein contact with another fragment that is far as you want, no problem, just interaction like this. Also from another chromosome, why not? I mean, you remember transcriptional factories? We mentioned the same story. One gene, and another gene, and they go close together because there is a transcriptional factor in between. So you how to measure them? So first you make formaldehyde-induced cross-link, exactly as in you do in chip, okay? Then you make a precipitation if you want. If you know the protein inside, you can make immunoprecipitation exactly as in the other technology, okay? But then to interrogate the proximalization of these two fragments, you make another trick, that is, you digest with a common restriction enzyme. Okay? A common restriction enzyme like this ECOR1 will find a cutting site more or less every 4,000 bases. So you can find it. It's random, but you can find it. Okay? So you cut here, okay, and make fragment of your complex. And then you make intramolecular ligation. So you add ATP-dependent ligase, DNA ligase. And this is very diluted reaction, because if you make a common ligase reaction, you will ligate everything together. But if you use a very dilute solution, you will only realize intramolecular ligation. Okay? So they are close. They will be ligated together. Okay? Then reverse cross-link, eliminate the proteins that are there exactly as in chip. At this point you make PCR using one primer from this black fragment here, and the other primer which recognizes the other gray fragment here. So if they are not connected between them, they are so far away that they won't give you any PCR protein. Okay? If this reaction that you see has happened, they are proximal to each other. So you will get an amplicon in between. Yeah. This is called the 3C assay. The chromosome conformation capture. Okay? And it will detect this kind of long-range interaction in chromosomes. Okay? Nothing else for today. This is the same. It's just another scheme of this one. Okay. So very far away loops, you have proteins there, make cuts there, and then ligation, and then PCR for single interaction. Okay, so we are done for today.